The content of the Focus on Females Radio Healthcare Clinic is for informational purposes only. The content is not intended to be a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified health provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition. Never disregard professional medical advice or delay in seeking it because of something you have heard on the Focus on Females Radio Healthcare Show. If you think you may have a medical emergency, call your doctor or 911 immediately. Focus on Females does not recommend or endorse any specific tests, physicians, products, procedures, opinions, or other information that may be mentioned on the radio show. Reliance on any information provided by Focus on Females or others appearing on the show at the invitation of Focus on Females is solely at your own risk. Now, it's time for the Focus on Females Radio Healthcare Clinic. Here, we create clarity out of confusion and guide you through today's healthcare maze. Each week, we'll focus on a different medical topic with a guest expert answering your questions. Future topics and guests can be seen at www.focusonfemales.com. Call in between 12:30 and 1 p.m. on Sundays and present your case to our experts. To get involved with today's clinic, call now in Hillsboro, 289-1860, and everywhere else, 877-969-8600. Be proactive with your health. We're here to focus on you. And now, our host, Dr. Stephen Maskin.
The Focus on Females Radio Healthcare Clinic is on, and we thank you for listening. Today, we are tackling pediatric bone marrow transplant with guest expert from Old Children's Hospital in St. Pete, Florida, Dr. Alexandra Petrovic. But first, this radio show and the free annual Focus on Females Women's Healthcare Symposium, now the largest in the country with 1,800 women, is supported by the not-for-profit Focus on Females Education Foundation, whose mission is to create an interactive, dynamic, community-based healthcare safety net, making you an expert on your personal medical needs. The result? Better partnering with your existing doctor, leading to more effective office visits, faster results, and a reduced economic burden of avoidable medical and emergency care. We save lives and protect families. And as I mentioned, today, pediatric bone marrow transplant, we have Dr. Alexandra Petrovic. And Alex, it's great to have you here today.
Thank you. I'm glad to be here.
Now, Dr. Petrovic was born in Belgrade, Serbia, moving to the United States at 16 years of age. She completed an undergraduate studies at the University of Oregon and medical school at the Oregon Health Sciences University. She finished pediatric residency at the New York Hospital Cornell Medical Center and her training in pediatric hematology oncology fellowship at the Memorial Sloan Kettering Cancer Center in New York. In 2003, Dr. Petrovic moved to Old Children's Hospital in St. Petersburg, Florida, to be part of the bone marrow transplant department, focusing on patients with primary immune deficient disease and bone marrow malignancies. She also continues working on the pathological physiology or the pathophysiology of graft versus host disease, and that is primarily in the pediatric population.
Correct.
And I think we talked before, there's actually a difference in looking at bone marrow transplantation, graft versus host complication in the pediatric population versus the adult.
We do see this complication a little bit less frequently in pediatric population. And the treatments that exist for prophylaxing for graft versus host disease and treating it once the disease is established certainly are improving with each year. So this is one of the main complications of transplantation that we encounter, but we are getting much better at prophylaxing and treating it.
Very good. Well, let's start at the beginning. And for our listeners, we don't assume anything. So What's so important about the bone? Bone is just for us to be able to walk around, right? There's nothing special going on about bone, is there?
Well, there's something quite special about the bones, and that is that the inner cavity in the bones contains hematopoietic stem cell, which actually gives rise to all of the blood components, such as the white cells, red cells, which carry oxygen. White cells obviously help fight infections. And then platelets, which help blood clot and help stop bleeding when it occurs.
So essentially then, the bone marrow, as you mentioned, the cavity inside the bone, is essential for life.
Absolutely.
Okay. And you were going to, I cut you off, and I'm sorry for that. Go right ahead.
That's all right. The other very important thing that hematopoietic stem cell that is housed in the bone marrow that it gives rise to are different components of the immune system, such as different types of white cells that are all important as they work together in a very organized fashion to fight all sorts of different infections. And that's the reason why hematopoietic stem cell transplantation, or what they used to be called bone marrow transplantation, can be used not only to cure malignant disease, but also to cure different disorders of the immune system as well.
So then there are two major reasons one would have what in the old days is called a bone marrow transplant, but today is called a hematopoietic, which is a rough word out there
yes,
for folks, stem cell transplant. And one being a deficiency in one's immune system.
Correct.
And the other being a deficiency in one of the bone marrow producing cell lines.
Right. It wouldn't be viewed sort of as deficiency, more a malignant transformation in one of the bone marrow producing cell lines, such as leukemias, for example.
Okay, good. All right. Now, the number of children, well, let me back up a little bit. What is the age range of the children that you see and manage at All Children's Hospital in St. Petersburg?
So we manage children from early infancy to age 21. So the youngest patients that we transplant, such as the babies that are a couple of months old, are typically children that are affected with immunodeficiency, and most commonly what that immunodeficiency is severe combined immunodeficiency.
Okay. And are the number of transplants in this age population increasing, say, over the last 10, 20 years?
I would probably say yes, because of our better understanding and recognition of these extremely complex disorders.
So we're able to better, we as a medical community, are better able to identify and diagnose these kids with these diseases and send them to a center of excellence to be able to be managed and receive a bone marrow transplant.
Correct.
With greater frequency than before.
Correct.
Okay. And how would you analyze the results of bone marrow transplant over the last decade, for example?
So I think over the last decades we have made quite a bit of strides in the field of transplantation. We have identified the HLA system, which is the way how we match our recipients and donors a lot better. We're matching the recipients and donors a lot more closely. We have methods that we can potentially manipulate the grafts to facilitate somewhat of a safer transplantation and maybe decrease the common complication that we see, such as graft versus host disease. We have better medications to help us fight infections, whether those are caused by bacteria, viruses, or fungi. And so that has ultimately led to certainly increasing survival rates for patients that are needing transplantation.
So you're able to actually take the donor, or actually be able to better now identify a donor than you have before, and you can actually modify that donor tissue to enhance yet further the chances of success of that donor tissue?
To some extent, yes.
Okay.
So this modification that you're mentioning is, in some cases, when we transplant patients, we're able to remove certain cells out of the graft to attempt to decrease rate of graft versus host disease, and those cells are called T cells. So that's what's called T cell depletion.
Okay, well, that's very exciting. If you can decrease the bad guys, that would prevent successful outcomes. Excellent. And then you mentioned the medications to fight to minimize risk of infection, and I guess how about the medications to medications to reduce risk of rejection?
So to reduce risk of rejections, we that really taps into the conditioning regimens that we're using for patients. And certainly we are trying to minimize the toxicity or the organ harming effects of the conditioning regimens, which in some cases include chemotherapy combined with radiation, sometimes chemotherapy alone, and biologic agents, which are really targeting to eliminate the recipient's immune system so that recipient's body can accept the new incoming stem cells from the donor.
All very exciting. And once again, every listener out there, you have a question on this topic, and I know you do. Call in at 289-1860, 289-1860. And outside of Hillsboro, for those of you that are streaming this live, it's area code 877-969-8600. Once again, 877-969-8600. Okay, so how, let's back up and ask this the fundamental question, what diseases are treated with hematopoietic stem cell transplantation, used to be known as bone marrow transplantation, in the pediatric population?
So in the pediatric population, we treat a wide variety of patients. Certainly patients with malignancies, whether those are hematologic malignancies, such as leukemias or lymphomas, or solid tumors, such as neuroblastoma, certain types of brain tumors. Then we also treat patients with immunodeficiencies and a very wide array of different immunodeficiencies. We treat patients with storage diseases, such as Hurler's disease.
I want to stop you right there. For the average listener out there, a storage disease is basically when the organelles, the little inside of a cell, the little structures that actually makes a cell function, called organelles, don't properly work. Let's just put it that
correct.
Way.
Correct. And there is a buildup of a product that should have normally been broken down and eliminated, and that causes toxicity and inability of organs where those products build up to not function as well.
And what's the most common storage disease that the public may be aware of, would you say?
Well,
that's
a tough question because we're quite focused mostly on Hurler's disease.
Okay.
In transplantation, but certain types of leukodystrophies also. But I would say probably Hurler's disease would be the most common.
And would you describe that as a mucopolysaccharide?
Correct.
Or a sugary protein kind of retention or,
yes.
or storage disease?
Yes.
With can metabolize.
Yes.
That. Okay.
And then the other group of disorders that we treat are disorders where there's failure of appropriate development of different blood components, such as diseases such as sickle cell disease or thalassemia, where the red cells are not formed appropriately, or diseases where patients are born without adequate numbers of different types of white cells or platelets. So in essence, you're using somebody else's stem cells to replace their own stem cell because their stem cell cannot produce blood components that should function appropriately.
Okay. We're going to take a quick break and come right back. Once again, the number here, call in with your questions, 289-1860, 289-1860 in Hillsborough County, elsewhere, 877-969-8600. We'll be right back with more on the Focus on Females Radio Healthcare Clinic.
This radio healthcare program is brought to you by the Focus on Females Education Foundation, a not-for-profit organization. Our mission is to make you an expert on your individual medical problems through dynamic and interactive educational programs. Real physicians answering real questions, speaking plain English, and giving practical, ready-to-use information on a wide variety of topics. Participation empowers families to better partner with their doctors. The result is more effective office visits, preventing unnecessary suffering, and eliminating the economic burdens of avoidable health and emergency care. We need your financial support. Donations to the foundation are tax deductible. Each and every dollar provides support so families can take control of their health. We have already saved and transformed lives for generations to come. Be a donor in what has been described as a phenomenon to reduce health illiteracy in our community. No donation is too small. To learn more about us and our free 5th Annual Women's Healthcare Symposium, March 27, 2010, visit www.focusonfemales.com. Donations can be made to Focus on Females Education Foundation, P.O. Box 320702, Tampa, Florida 33679-2702. Thank you.
Do your eyes have a foreign body sensation or are scratchy and sandy? Do they burn, sting, or itch, or are heavy and tired? Maybe your eyes are sensitive to light or your eyelids achy and sore. Have you seen countless doctors and still can't find relief? Have they told you, sorry, but you'll have to live with this and nothing can be done for you? Well, first, it's likely you suffer from dry eye. And second, don't stand for those answers anymore. Just because someone else doesn't understand your dry eye problems, go to the only eye doctor in Central Florida that specializes exclusively in dry eye and related diseases. Meet with Dr. Stephen Maskin at the Dry Eye and Cornea Treatment Center, where you will be given up to 2 hours of face-to-face time with the doctor to get at the root cause of your dry eye pain, fluctuating vision, and redness, plus begin targeted therapy right away. Haven't you waited long enough?
Studio lines are open, so get focused, get involved, and get the advice you need for your health. In Hillsboro, 289-1860, and everywhere else, 877-969-8600. Once again, our host for the Focus on Females Radio Healthcare Clinic, Dr. Stephen Maskin.
Okay, welcome back to the Focus on Females Radio Healthcare Clinic. Today we're tackling pediatric bone marrow transplant with also now known as hematopoietic stem cell transplantation with guest expert Dr. Alexandra Petrovic from the All Children's Hospital in St. Petersburg, Florida. We've been discussing what that means, the function of the bone marrow, the importance of it for each of us in basically to keep us functional human beings, as well as the indications for this transplantation, including diseases such as leukemia, lymphoma, and solid tumors like neuroblastoma, and also a disease called Wilms tumor. And Alexandra, would you explain Wilms tumor? Because on the line we have one of your patients who is a patient with Wilms tumor being treated by you.
Right, so Wilms tumor is a malignancy of the kidney that is quite common in pediatric population. It has very good cure rates. However, I would say about 15 or 20% of patients do relapse, and they do then need to continue on with quite aggressive chemotherapy. Their regimen also includes surgical resection and oftentimes radiation. Unfortunately, in many of our patients that are treated for malignancies, the treatments that we use do have a side effect, which can be induction of secondary malignancy, such as myelodysplastic syndrome or secondary leukemias, typically acute myelogenous leukemias, which do carry very poor prognosis and are very aggressive malignancies.
Okay. So on the line is Mary. Mary, welcome to the Focus on Females Radio Healthcare Clinic.
Oh, thank you.
Now, Mary, you are how old?
I'm 14 right now.
Okay. And you have history of Wilms tumor?
Not really. That's not my most recent diagnosis.
Okay.
But I had it a long time ago.
You had it a long time ago. Okay. And how old, do we know how old you were when you had the Wilms tumor first diagnosed?
When I was first diagnosed, I was 5 years old.
Okay. And what was done at the time?
It was very progressed. So they had to do surgery. First they did surgery, and then they did some chemo, and then they did radiation.
Okay. And the surgery was to remove the tumor, I imagine?
Yeah, it was. They removed my tumor. It had eaten up all my kidney. So they removed it and all the pieces of it that they could find that were hanging around because it was very large already. It was.
This affected one kidney?
I have one kidney right now.
Okay.
There wasn't one to take out. It was already eaten.
So the bad kidney they removed, and you have one healthy kidney right now still functioning for you.
Well,
is that right?
Well, the cancer had eaten the other kidney, so they kind of removed it.
Okay, so you have some kidney left behind. You're not getting dialyzed.
No.
Okay, good. Okay, so so you received the chemotherapy. And Alex, these patients with Wilms, do they, when they're first diagnosed, do they have widespread disease? Or is it localized?
It all depends when they're diagnosed. And you do appropriate staging to determine, you know, what stage the tumor is. And that is going to dictate how aggressive the therapy is going to be.
In this case, for Mary, she required aggressive therapy.
Correct.
And so she received, radiation, whole body radiation? Or how's that?
No, the radiation is usually to the sites of the involvement with disease in Wilms tumor. And then chemotherapy, and obviously surgical resection.
Okay.
Yeah, you only want to radiate what's necessary.
Thank you, Mary. Thank you. And so everything, so the area that needed to be irradiated was very localized.
Yeah, as localized as it could be.
Good. Okay. And when, how soon after therapy was this myelodysplastic syndrome identified?
Well, I had a relapse of Wilms tumor when I was 9, and I received about three years of treatment for that, chemo, radiation, surgery, all that good stuff. And then I was diagnosed with myelodysplastic syndrome in 2007.
Okay. So in 2007, is that when Dr. Petrovic was introduced to you?
Yeah. We had seen her before, but never really properly introduced.
Okay. And you're 14, you said? Okay. And what do you, Alex, what do you, Dr. Petrovic, what do you recall from your first meeting with Mary back in 07?
Well, I have met her sort of in passing previously, but when I first met her, I met a very lovely young lady who was very sharp and who will keep you on your toes every moment that you interact with her.
I see that.
Who will challenge you and ask you a lot of questions that are actually excellent, and who is very, very reliable patient who always has a very positive outlook, and she's just a lovely person to be around.
Wonderful.
Thank you.
All right, so back in 07, she was diagnosed with myelodysplastic syndrome, and tell me at that point what the decisions, the therapeutic options were and how you proceeded.
So when you are diagnosed with myelodysplastic syndrome, you look at, there's different prognostic factors that will determine how quickly this myelodysplastic syndrome will probably progress to leukemia. In Mary's case, she had already about 10% abnormal cells in her marrow that were starting to show signs of leukemia. So as we were trying to find a donor for her, we did give her a course of chemotherapy to keep the disease in check, and we were quite lucky to find a fully matched, unrelated donor for Mary, and she proceeded then to transplantation, which I believe was December 20th, 07, Mary?
Yes.
Okay.
That seems to be quite a feat to find a fully matched, unrelated donor. Is that, am I wrong?
Well, it depends on a lot of times on the patient's ethnicity. Mm-hmm. In our Caucasian patients, we are able to find fully matched donors in about 70% of the cases.
And how many antigens are you looking at when you say it's fully matched? How many?
So we look at 10 antigens, and you look at HLA A, B, CW, DRB1, and DQB1.
So altogether almost 15.
No, that's 10.
But that's 10 including those.
Correct. You're okay. Including those, and you get 5 of those antigens from your mom, 5 from the dad as you inherit them. So we are looking for a 10 out of 10 matched donor.
That's outstanding. All right, so that was December of 2007, and what happened after that?
Who do you want to answer that question,
Mary,
me or Mary?
Mary, I'm going to let you take a swing at this one.
After transplant?
Back in December of 2007. Do you remember that far back?
Some of it.
Okay.
Well, after transplant, we thought transplant was going to be like, we'd be there a lot longer than we were, so we packed a whole bunch of stuff going in. Room decorations, piano, different like pillowcase, our own pillows and pillowcases, I think, and just like everything we could possibly think of. And then we got out a lot sooner than we thought. We went to Ronald McDonald House, and while I was in with transplant, I had a small case of graft versus host, I think. And I had some C. diff that I caught, but that's pretty common. Lots of kids get that when they're in transplant. And then I went to Ronald McDonald House afterwards because I couldn't. I live far away from the hospital, and Dr. Petrovich wanted us to be close for the first 100 days.
Right.
Because that's crucial time. So we stayed close, pretty close, and then I got BK induced hemorrhagic cystitis, and I was into the hospital again for like about 3 months with
that. What's BK?
BK virus is named after a guy, it's not named after Burger King. he found it, and it's a new virus, and they're still. It affects the kidneys, and it can affect the lungs, and it can affect the liver, mostly. But it's also in the blood.
So a self-limited infection, or do you have to be treated for that, Mary?
Well, usually they don't treat it, but they're starting to treat it. It depends on how serious it is and how much problems it's causing. It's still very new.
Mm-hmm. Alex, is that when she got the BK virus, the hemorrhagic cystitis, how do you view that as her practitioner and manage those?
Right. So usually when Mary developed hemorrhagic cystitis, she...
Which is
bleeding from the lining of the bladder because the virus has a propensity to attack the cells that are lining the bladder.
And this could be a serious problem.
Yes, it can. And you generally... If you do not have presence of the virus in the blood, we have not opted to treat in the past. And the reason is that the treatment for a BK virus is not without side effects.
Mm-hmm.
And in Mary's case, originally the virus was only present in the urine. However, over time, it did start to be present in her blood, which necessitated initiation of treatment in order to protect her kidney, which the virus can also injure and affect. And we have really learned a lot from our renal transplant patients and our nephrology colleagues on how to attempt to manage this, because in their hands, this is a quite devastating infectious reactivation post-renal transplant.
Mm.
So Mary has been on several different lines of treatment for the BK in her blood, and she still has some amounts, but they're continuing to go down as we're trying to preserve her kidney function as much as we can.
Okay. We're going to come right back with more, but we have to take a quick break. Be right back with more. Mary, stay with us on the Focus on Females Radio Health Care Clinic.
The Focus on Females Radio Health Care Clinic. Call now in Hillsboro, 813-289-1860. Anywhere else, 877-969-8600. More in a few moments.
Lazy laptops, iffy iPhones, baffling big screens. Oh, I'm on it. I'm your digital goddess, Kim Komando. And when you make my weekend show your standing appointment, I'll make sure your digital world runs smoothly. So join me, Kim Komando, right here this weekend. We'll have fun exploring all things digital.
Kim Komando, Sunday afternoon at 2 on Talk Radio 860 WGUL. This radio healthcare program is brought to you by the Focus on Females Education Foundation, a not-for-profit organization. Our mission is to make you an expert on your individual medical problems through dynamic and interactive educational programs. Real physicians answering real questions, speaking plain English, and giving practical, ready-to-use information on a wide variety of topics. Participation empowers families to better partner with their doctors. The result is more effective office visits, preventing unnecessary suffering, and eliminating the economic burdens of avoidable health and emergency care. We need your financial support. Donations to the foundation are tax deductible. Each and every dollar provides support so families can take control of their health. We have already saved and transformed lives for generations to come. Be a donor in what has been described as a phenomenon to reduce health illiteracy in our community. No donation is too small. To learn more about us and our free 5th Annual Women's Healthcare Symposium, March 27, 2010, visit www.focusonfemales.com. Donations can be made to Focus on Females Education Foundation, P.O. Box 320702, Tampa, Florida 33679-2702. Thank you. Your host for the Focus on Females Radio Healthcare Clinic is ophthalmologist and eye surgeon, Dr. Stephen L. Maskin. Dr. Maskin is the medical director of the Dry Eye and Cornea Treatment Center, the proud sponsor of today's show. At the Dry Eye and Cornea Treatment Center, Dr. Maskin specializes in solving difficult dry eye and cornea disorders with patients traveling from over 35 states and 5 continents for his evaluation. Dr. Maskin manages these dry eye disorders using innovative medical and surgical therapies, including the use of placenta-derived amniotic membrane, a new patent-pending natural eye lubricant to provide relief for dry eye sufferers, an exciting new procedure to unblock obstructed tear glands, and a topical cure for eye surface cancer. Dr. Maskin has been successfully managing difficult dry eye cases for over 20 years and is board-certified, fellowship-trained, and a fellow of the American College of Surgeons and American Academy of Ophthalmology. He's been selected a best doctor in America every year from 2000 through 2009 and as an America's top ophthalmologist by Consumers Research Council of America. We hope the Focus on Females education programs, including this show, will help you and your family find the health care that works for you. Focus on Females believes in saving lives and protecting families. And please, visit drmaskin.com, and if you have not found relief for your painful red dry eyes, come in to see Dr. Maskin at the Dry Eye and Cornea Treatment Center, where comfortable eyes lead to restored lives. Studio lines are open, so get focused, get involved, and get the advice you need for your health. In Hillsboro, 289-1860, and everywhere else, 877-969-8600. Once again, our host for the Focus on Females Radio Healthcare Clinic, Dr. Stephen Maskin.
And welcome back to the Focus on Females Radio Healthcare Clinic. We are tackling pediatric bone marrow transplantation, also known as hematopoietic stem cell transplantation, with Dr. Alex Petrovic from the All Children's Hospital in St. Petersburg. And on the phone is a lovely young lady named Mary, who's 14 and a half years old, something like that, Mary?
I'll be 15 in November.
Okay, 15-year-old to be Mary. And Mary has been treated with a transplant in, what year was the transplant, Mary?
2007.
It was 2007.
It was December, though.
Okay.
Late December.
All right. And now you've had some bumps in the road, right? You've had a graft versus host reaction, which was treated successfully.
Yeah, we think so.
All right. And you have this, I've had a history of this BK virus, which has caused bleeding from your bladder. But has the bleeding stopped?
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, you have to get that fixed or you'll die because it just hurts so much.
Okay.
Well, actually, you don't die from it anymore, so don't freak out if you ever get it. But I mean, it hurts.
Okay. Well, that's great. Let me ask you, Mary, do you remember, I should ask Dr. Petrovic, how do you prepare a patient for transplantation?
So, you know, there's a couple of steps that you need to go through. First, you need to make certain that the patient has a diagnosis that can be cured by transplant. Then you need to identify an appropriate donor. And then you really need to make certain that the patient's body can withstand the intensity of the preparatory regimen and possible complications of transplant. So we do quite extensive organ function testing of all the vital organs. You need to make certain that the patient does not have any active infections and that they're in good physical condition to proceed.
Okay. And for those out there that potentially one day might be a donor, are there risks involved with donating?
Well, there is. Before we sort of talk about risks involved with donating, there's three different sources of stem cells that we transplant in 2009.
Okay.
We transplant bone marrow grafts, which are obtained from the bone marrow harvest, which is done in the operating room. Patient is asleep, and certain amount of bone marrow is withdrawn through needles that are introduced into the back of the pelvic bones to remove the bone marrow. That volume is going to depend on, obviously, the recipient's weight. The procedure itself, because the patients are under anesthesia, is not painful, but there's a certain level of discomfort that the donors do have afterwards. Many of our, for example, pediatric donors that have donated to their brothers and sisters, will tell you that they are a little bit achy, some are a bit nauseous from anesthesia. But for the most part, most of our donors have been able to go back and visit their siblings that are in the bone marrow unit on the same day of donation. So they do go home on the same day.
Okay.
That's one way of donating. The second way that we get the grafts is from using a peripheral blood collection. You can use a medication to push the stem cells out from the bone marrow into the peripheral blood and then collect through an apheresis machine, which the procedure does not require anesthesia. The donors are in a apheresis center or in the collection room, and they're hooked up to this machine through two IVs, and they sit there for about 3 or 4 hours, depending on how long it takes to collect the appropriate number of stem cells. The major side effects that we see with this procedure is related to the administration of the drug that actually is given subcutaneously. And as it's pushing the stem cells out from the bone marrow, patients might feel some bone aches and just sort of general malaise.
Now, a person might ask, if I'm you're pushing out my, stem cells. What, are you leaving any behind? How do you respond to that?
Right. So you are leaving quite a bit behind because all of us are born with a good number of stem cells. So even a small child can, donate for an older sibling, for example, even if there is a weight discrepancy safely, because all of the stem cells that we have in the bone marrow can renew themselves, as well as then progress and develop the different components of the blood.
Mm-hmm.
And then the third form of grafts that we're using for transplantation in this day and age are umbilical cord blood grafts,
okay,
which are stored and processed at the time when the babies are born. And this source of stem cell has proven to be quite valuable because they are much more forgiving when it comes to graft versus host disease, and you can use more discrepancy between the donor and the recipient without increasing significantly the risk of graft versus host disease. So that has become one source where we have been able to find donors for our recipients in the past where we couldn't find volunteer donors for.
And some people are saving their own umbilical cord blood.
Correct.
Which is
a little bit different than what we are using when families save the sibling's blood if the other sibling is affected with leukemia. But where we get our umbilical cord blood grafts is through cord blood banks that participate through National Marrow Donor Program. And that's where we get our volunteer unrelated donors as well.
Is it a good idea for parents to save their newborn's umbilical cord blood?
I think that's a fairly debatable topic. There is certainly some concern that premalignant cells have been seen in cord bloods that were banked even in children that develop leukemia as late, I believe, as 9 years of age. So I think there's definitely pros and cons. Hematopoietic stem cells are being used more and more for other indications in repairing certain other tissues, such as cardiac tissue and potentially even CNS tissue. So it might be something that might prove to be useful. However, I'm still very worried about using a cord blood graft in a patient that has developed leukemia because of possibility of contamination of their own cord blood.
How about a parent as well? I have 3 kids, and if I save each of their cord blood, then if one of them develops a problem, they can always get cord blood from their siblings.
Well, that's not necessarily always the case, mm-hmm. because the siblings have a chance of 1 in 4 in matching each other. Mm-hmm. And that's just the nature of how the HLA is inherited. So that it doesn't automatically mean just because you have a sibling that you're going to have a match.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where we're very fortunate that we have this large bank of volunteer unrelated donors as well as unrelated cord blood units from which we can get donors to cure patients such as Mary and other patients that have needed unrelated transplantation.
Now, Mary, do you know what kind of donor you received?
Unrelated donor.
Was it a bone marrow graft?
Yes.
Okay, good for you. Mary, I want to thank you for joining us today and give you an opportunity to ask a question of Dr. Petrovic, or if you want to leave a message to all the listeners out there.
I would like all the listeners to make a donation to All Children's if they could, please. That would be very nice. We're building a new hospital at All Children's. Well, it's actually already built, but we've still got a lot of work to do, and they could really use the money to help a lot of kids like me. You can't save lives unless you have the tools necessary, and a lot of the tools necessary you have to have money for. So if they could please make a donation, that could make a difference. It could make the difference between life and death.
That's excellent. How about asking for a small donation for Focus on Females, who is helping get the word out?
Okay, that too, because Focus on Females is super awesome for helping. So definitely, donate to Focus on Females, donate to All Children's, if you can.
Great.
It would be greatly appreciated.
Great. And Dr. Petrovic, would you like to have a parting word for Mary?
Well, just want to thank her for being an inspiration to everybody that has been involved in her care and for being such a great person. And I'll see you in clinic next week.
Okay, I'll see you.
Thanks, Mary, for joining with us today, and have a great day.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, you so long now. Bye-bye. And I'll tell you what, let's take a quick break, and we'll come back with another patient. Be right back with more on the Focus on Females Radio Healthcare Clinic.
This radio healthcare program is brought to you by the Focus on Females Education Foundation, a not-for-profit organization. Our mission is to make you an expert on your individual medical problems through dynamic and interactive educational programs. Real physicians answering real questions, speaking plain English, and giving practical, ready-to-use information on a wide variety of topics. Participation empowers families to better partner with their doctors. The result is more effective office visits, preventing unnecessary suffering, and eliminating the economic burdens of avoidable health and emergency care. We need your financial support. Donations to the foundation are tax deductible. Each and every dollar provides support so families can take control of their health. We have already saved and transformed lives for generations to come. Be a donor in what has been described as a phenomenon to reduce health illiteracy in our community. No donation is too small. To learn more about us and our free 5th Annual Women's Healthcare Symposium, March 27, 2010, visit www.focusonfemales.com. Donations can be made to Focus on Females Education Foundation, P.O. Box 320702, Tampa, Florida 33679-2702. Thank you. Confused about dry eye? Not getting answers as to why your eyes are so red and painful and your blurry vision that gets a little better with a good blink? Now you can learn all about dry eye, the causes, treatments, and home remedies from the number one best-selling consumer book on dry eye problems, Reversing Dry Eye Syndrome by Dr. Stephen Maskin. Published by Yale University Press, Reversing Dry Eye Syndrome has been selected as a 2008 Best Book of the Year by the Association of American University Presses and a 2007 Best Consumer Health Book by Library Journal. Find answers for your dry eye. Go to your bookstore and pick up a copy of Reversing Dry Eye. You'll be glad you did.
Studio lines are open, so get focused, get involved, and get the advice you need for your health. In Hillsboro, 289-1860. And everywhere else, 877-969-8600. Once again, our host for the Focus on Females Radio Healthcare Clinic, Dr. Stephen Maskin.
Welcome back to the Focus on Females Radio Healthcare Clinic. Again, today is the Hematopoietic Stem Cell Transplant Day, used to be known as Pediatric Bone Marrow Transplant. My guest expert is Dr. Alexandra Petrovic from Old Children's Hospital in St. Pete, Florida. We've just spoken with a young lady named Mary, who is doing well, and we have on the line now Heather. Heather, welcome to the Focus on Females Radio Healthcare Clinic.
Hi, how are you?
Hi, great. And with me is Dr. Alexandra Petrovic, who I believe you know.
Yes.
Hello.
Hi.
And we thank you for being with us today. You have a young son.
Yes, his name's Christian. He's here with us, too.
Okay. Hi, Christian, are you on the phone? Or?
Yes.
Hi, Christian.
Hello.
And who's going to tell me a little bit about your history, Christian, you or Mom?
Probably Mom.
Okay.
Christian has a disease called Wiskott-Aldridge syndrome. It's an immune deficiency and a bleeding disorder. He's actually received 2 bone marrow transplants.
Okay. And so immune deficiency and a bleeding disorder. And so the risk there, what kind of infections do patients with this disease get?
He caught everything under the sun. His immune deficiency didn't work properly, and he actually was not able to be around children for several years of his life. And the bleeding disorder was a big problem as well because as an infant, like even just picking him up out of the crib, he would bruise internally and stuff and start bleeding spontaneously internally, and it was challenging at best.
Christian is what, 11 years old now?
12 now, yes.
12 now, okay. So this happened within the first, what, year of life?
Yeah, he was born with the disease. We found out within the first 3 days of him being born, he had little pinpoint hemorrhages all over his skin called petechia.
Okay.
His doctor actually had to guess at what he had, and it took 6 months for us to get him diagnosed because there's only one doctor in the U.S. that tests for it.
Okay, so this is not the kind of thing that kids are normally screened for. Is that rare?
Yeah, it's extremely rare.
Okay, so he was 6 months of age when the diagnosis was made. And then take it from there.
We looked for donors, and he actually had, I believe there were 10 that he had to pick from, which was unheard of. And we selected the best one out of those and started the process for bone marrow transplantation and got him in, I believe it was April of 98, and started chemo and went through the whole process.
Okay. So actually, how old was he when he received his first transplant?
He was 1 year old during the first one.
Okay. And Alex, would you like to make some comments on his transplant? He had initial one at 1 year of age, and then a second one at 8 years?
At 8 years, yes.
Okay.
Yeah, so Christian had his first transplant at a year of age, and unfortunately, very shortly after the transplant, one fraction of his new graft started to go away, which is the myeloid fraction, which gives rise to platelets. So by about 3 to 4 months after transplant, Christian was sort of back at square one with his bleeding problem. He did retain a good amount of immune system cells from his donor called T cells. So he did not have as pronounced probably infectious problems that he would have had if those cells were not there. But nevertheless, his immune system did not work in a very well coordinated way. So we made a decision to proceed to second transplant, actually using the same donor, about 4.5 years ago, correct?
Yeah, it was, 2005.
Question for you. When you do the second transplant, do you eliminate the existing marrow when you give the second transplant?
So we did eliminate it to the some extent, but we did not need to use, because we were using the same donor, we did not need to use as aggressive chemotherapy regimen per se. But we needed to really knock down all of Christian's cells that were there to really facilitate this new graft to come in and stay for good and not be lost over something.
So it's not the kind of thing where you can keep that part of the marrow which is already working, the T-cell fraction.
Correct. Okay. Because some of those were also Christian's and some were his donors. So for all intents and purposes, this was a standard bone marrow transplant, and Christian did extremely well.
How long ago was your second transplant, Christian?
4.5 years.
Wow, 4.5 years ago?
Yeah.
And what are you doing these days? Are things going well?
Yeah, I'm playing flag football and going outside a lot and playing with friends and stuff.
You're not developing those little red spots on your skin anymore, huh?
Uh-uh.
No infections, huh?
No.
Wow, how about that? That's pretty exciting, isn't it?
Yeah.
So, what, Dr. Petrick? How frequently do you see Christian? And what do you just talk about on your follow-ups? And what are the things that you?
So we see him about every 3 months because of really keeping a close track on how much of his cells are his donors and how much are his own. Because of what has happened with the first transplant. And those are actually a very joyful visits because we get to discuss sort of all the new things he's doing, all the school stuff that he's doing.
And to check on the cells, that's just a painless blood draw?
Or do you have to take
some bone marrow?
No, you can check on the cells just from the blood draw.
Outstanding. Well, congratulations, Christian. And what grade are you in?
Six.
Six. Okay. Well, the hour just about wrapping up, Christian. So would you like to say anything, or ask a question of Dr. Petrovic, or say anything to our listeners? And the same goes for your mom.
I would like to say that donating blood is very good because it saves people's lives.
Outstanding. And Heather?
Yes, I would actually like to say the same thing. Donating blood and bone marrow is extremely important. Christian's obviously had 2 bone marrow transplants, but he's also received over 60 blood transfusions or platelet transfusions during his life, and without those would not be here. So thank you to all the people that donate, and if you don't, please do.
Okay.
Okay.
And Dr. Petrovic, would you like to parting thoughts or for not just Christian and Heather, but also for our listeners as we wrap up the hour?
Well, I hope that, within this hour we were able to demonstrate to the public a little bit more about stem cell transplantation, hematopoietic stem cell transplantation, and that this is a very intense procedure that requires a lot of commitment on everybody's part, and particularly on the part of our donors and the recipients, and that I would really like to encourage everybody to register to be a potential bone marrow donor, as well as to donate different blood products, because without those we wouldn't be able to do these procedures safely, and to obviously thank all the families that we have treated over the course of 6 years that I've been here, and also thank all the donors and all of the support staff at All Children's Hospital.
And on behalf